Good morning, everyone. Can you all hear me? Good. I'm clearly not Jeanan Hatler. She was supposed to be the moderator, and unfortunately, she has the flu, so she couldn't make it here. I'm going to be very brief. I was supposed to be one of the speakers because I had recently designed a student alumni program for Harvard Alumni Association. They're not here to talk about it, so I was going to talk about it. But in view of the time constraints, we really want to make this more of a question and answer session. So I will present the speakers we have and take it from there. Basically what we're doing, this conference for a number of years, as you know, has tried to help us kind of delineate what makes the affinity market, our part of the travel industry, more special, easier to market, just because of a variety of factors. So there have been a number of suggestions over the years, anything from very specialized program names and program itineraries. The northern highlights of Italy doesn't work anymore, so you need something more specialized. The lecturers, the quality and the popularity of the lecturers, special events, invitations, and so on. But there are also a number of organizations that have really thought out of the box to do something that is totally out of the concept of all of what all of us have been doing all these years as far as designing a standard program for our membership, and that's what we're going to hear today from three different viewpoints. And I have not brought my notes on the biographies. Give me a second. So we are going to, as I mentioned, hear three different viewpoints of people who organize the student combination of student and alumni programs. And then we're going to try to open it up for a general discussion. My apologies. So first we're going to hear from Dr. Benjamin Keyes. Dr. Keyes is a professor at the, is professor of at the Divine Mercy University, director of a Center for Trauma and Resiliency Studies in Arlington, Virginia. As the head of the Center for Trauma Studies, he supervises the developing and training of graduate students in first response and chronic trauma. Dr. Keyes and his team have recently received the Richard Kluft Research Award for work and research in the People's Republic of China from the Journal of Trauma and Dissociation and the International Society for the Study of Trauma and Dissociation. Dr. Keyes received his doctorate in rehabilitation counseling in 1985 from International College, and his most recent in counseling psychology from the University of Sarasota in 2003. And he has doctoral degrees in theology, divinity, and ministry. Dr. Keyes?
Thank you. I brought some pictures along this morning because I thought it would be a good idea to show you a little bit of what we do. We created a thematic program that was targeted to an area of student interest in the area of psychology. But this can be applied to almost any area that a professor has a vested interest or a vested focus. And we created sort of an immersion program that led our students to levels of certification in the area of trauma. We partnered with an agency or an organization in the host country, and what we did was we came alongside of that host agency and worked with them for a period of 2.5 to 3 weeks, giving our students enough time in the field to actually get the certifications, and over time, we actually built what we did into coursework. So they actually got, our master's and our doctoral students actually got credit toward a third internship for our master's students and hours toward their licensure for our PhD students in psychology. The host agency was pivotal, but even more important was the working that we did with our travel folks, because they helped us to make the contacts, they made all the arrangements, and quite honestly, they made my job very, very easy and very, very simple. We included, with working with our students, alumni and community professionals. Alumni because this was something that was being offered in addition to what had happened when they were students in our programs. I did this at Regent. I'm now doing this again at Divine Mercy in Arlington. We ran our program for 10 years at Regent University. We're in our first year in Arlington, and we are growing exponentially each time we do a training because there's just a huge interest. We're also finding that our alumni have an amazing amount of interest. They're basically coming back and saying, oh, I can do this. We provide trainings throughout the year in the function, but quite honestly, if you had a professor that was targeting specific interest, occasionally doing lectures or podcasts or various things to enhance the interest or tied to research interests, this can be done. We also included community professionals. With community professionals, this again was value added. In other words, we were working towards certifications that they did not get when they were going through their education process. And these certifications were creating sort of a niche, if you will, within their own professional development and their own professional growth. You saw some of the pictures of our involvement in South Africa. This is Romania, where we work with an organization that works with the gypsies. You see our students learning how to dance with the gypsies, but we worked with families, we worked with institutions, we helped train and work with our host agency. And the idea was, again, to train them in the same skills that our students had trained in, so that they, in turn, could use those skills to be able to work with the indigenous populations that they were tied with. The opportunity gave us a chance to work in prisons, in universities, nursing homes, child protection workers, gypsy camps in Romania. This is in Trinidad. We worked with children and that were connected to gang activity. And wherever we went, we have been able to, in each of the times that we have deployed, we have been able to connect to host agencies on the ground, largely through our travel people. They helped us to develop solid relationships. In fact, I think we've been to Romania now 3 or 4 times. I plan on going back there with a group next year again because the connection is just so strong. Gives our students the opportunity to get real skills before they go into their practice, before they go into their profession. It allowed our community folks, our community professionals, and our alumni to get training and to get expertise in areas that they had not originally focused on. The last picture here that I'll show you is in Kenya. We worked with one of the displacement camps in Kenya, taking our students into working with the community. A lot of working in the community, a lot of working with various clinics and hospitals. The professor that would do a program like this is really only limited by whatever his interest in is and the ability to think through what they want, what they need, so forth. Our limitations, one of the questions on our preparation sheet was about limitations. Limitations for us were countries where they were in a no-fly zone, There was a warning from the State Department. Of course, for risk management from the part of the university, we had to watch for that. But also the biggest difficulty that we had was students that had visas from other countries. Because as we were going into third world nations and so forth, we had to be very careful about the visas that our students held and what countries they were from. I want to thank you for allowing me to present some of this to you this morning. Hopefully throughout the rest of the presentation, we'll talk some more. Thanks.
Our next presenter is Mark Waldron, who is from Concordia University in Chicago and travel planner manager for student groups, as well as Concordia Travel Friends. Student groups range from educational travel programs to music ensemble performance tours. These tours are generally 14 days and are accompanied by a professor or an ensemble conductor. Concordia Travel Friends are friends and alumni of the university, who value learning as part of the travel experience. On several occasions, travel programs have been designed to include both students and travel friends for either part of all or all of the itinerary. Mark has received his BA from Concordia University and his Master of Education from the University of Houston. Mark? You can stay there if you like.
Yes, okay, great. You can hear me okay? So our programs, first of all, I should just note that all of our programs are not combinations of students and alumni, okay? We run student programs, we run alumni programs, and then occasionally we combine them. When we combine them, they tend toward three models, okay? Sometimes we call it Concordia Travel Friends. It's a Concordia Travel Friends itinerary, essentially, to which we invite students to participate. Or it may be a student travel experience, in which case it's always a study. There's always a study and a credit component for them. And to that, we invite Concordia friends and alumni to join us also. And then occasionally, there's a combination from the outset. It's intended to be a student and a Concordia Travel Friends program. What sort of differentiates them is when it's a student program, the program is designed for students, and we invite the alumni to go along, but with the caveat that the program is for students, and students don't always travel the same way or have the same priorities with travel that older adults do. And so they have to be willing to be okay with that. When the program is designed for our Concordia Friends group, it's designed with them in mind, and so it tends to be more costly, and the students have to be willing, they're welcome to go along, but they have to be willing to come up with the cost, and that's usually the thing that if they can't or decide not to go, it's usually based on price of the tour. Now we have also design programs where both groups travel simultaneously with their own priorities and they interface with each other. We're doing a program like that we did one in China a few years ago. So we had two separate groups traveling with separate guides and coaches, but the itineraries crisscrossed two or three times. So they had dinner together, the students were performing, it was a music ensemble that was performing in China, so the alumni could attend a concert and then have dinner with the students afterwards, those kinds of interactions. But during the days, the actual touring, they were mostly separate. We're doing something similar in South Africa in May. Our student music group is going first and they'll perform through South Africa. We also then have a Concordia Friends group that will begin and dovetail at the end of the student tour. So the older adults will arrive in South Africa on the last weekend of the student tour and interface that weekend, and then the students will come home and the rest of the tour will happen with the alumni group. We also did one program to London, Stratford, and Edinburgh a couple of years ago. And we ran the two groups simultaneously, but with two tracks. As I mentioned, the students, one of their concerns is budget, almost always. And so we ran a student hostel track and a Concordia Friends hotel track. Either group could sign up for whichever one they wanted to. We had some students that took the hotel track. So when we were in London for 5 days. Students stayed at a hostel, which of course was much less expensive than the rest of the group who stayed at the hotel. But we met after breakfast for a day of touring and did all of the touring together. The professor on that tour was a literature professor and did literary highlights of London, Stratford, and Edinburgh. And each of those sites was set up the same way. There was a hotel track and a hostel track. So the students could go on the same, experience the same tour, but at a much less cost. And that's what they're after. We have found, our students anyway. So those are the three models that we work from.
Our next speaker is Laura Willis, the Associate Director of Alumni Relations at Dickinson College in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. She has held a variety of positions within the alumni office since 1998, and the alumni travel program was recently added to her responsibilities, and she has a psychology degree from Roanoke College in Virginia. Laura?
Good morning. So Dickinson is a private liberal arts college in Carlisle, Pennsylvania, with a strong focus on global education. We've had our own global centers across the globe we have 12 different centers for 50 years. We started in the academic year 65-66. Our centers are not in touristy areas. We don't want our students to go be tourists speaking English for a year. So we're not in Rome, we're in Bologna. We're not in London, we're in Norwich. We're not in Madrid, we're in Malaga. Our students are really immersed. What our program does is we are taking our alums to our global education centers. For some alums that do this, it's that they're going back. They're going back to the year that was just transformative for them. For some, they're bringing their spouses along to show them everything that they keep talking about. For some, it's people who didn't get to go there as a student and they always wanted to because all their friends went to Bologna and they've just always wanted to go. So our program, we are not taking students and alumni on a trip. We are taking our alumni to our centers while our students are there. So that gives us some great opportunities. These are very small, intimate trips. We're taking advantage of our uniquely Dickinson connections in all these different places. So our directors live in the centers for 2 years at a time. They rotate in and out. So our directors, our faculty know the directors of the museums, and they know architects that have done great things in the different cities. So it allows us to be more than just a tourist, so more than they could do by just booking a flight to Bologna themselves. We're getting behind-the-scenes tours. We're hearing from some special people. We're getting special access to venues. When we were in Bologna, we were able to be in their city hall, which is one of the oldest buildings in Bologna, with the University of Bologna, which is the oldest university in Europe. So it allows us to do some special things. Alums could also sit in on some of the classes so they could get back to the classroom and they actually had homework to do. So any readings the students had to do for those classes, the alums actually were sent ahead of time and strongly encouraged to go ahead and do their homework so they could be part of the conversation. We had receptions and dinners with the alums and the students, which was a great opportunity. So for many folks who went on the Bologna trip last spring, they had studied there. And so they love to hear what's the same and what's different, what the students are doing during their time in Bologna, and comparing it to their experiences. We did some touristy things. We did some day trips out of the city and did some like architectural walking tours of the city. But our trips are a la carte right now. So people could choose to do what they wanted to do. They could do as much or as little as they wanted to do. Everybody pretty much did everything. But some people didn't do some of the classes, but they could pick and choose what they wanted to do. So some folks, because they had been there, wanted to go back to the neighborhoods where they had lived or wanted to go back to their favorite gelato shop and just spend some time taking in the culture. We let them book their own flights so they could go when they wanted, use their preferred airline, use their points if they wanted to. We had a hotel block, but they didn't have to stay there. A lot of them who had been there did Airbnb. And so we had friends, we had four people from one class that was there for a year, and they booked an apartment together, and they just had the best time. And because they could book their own flights, everybody except one couple on the trip used it as a kicking off point for a personal vacation, because they're already there. So one couple was going to Venice and they were taking a cruise. One couple was skiing in Austria while they were there. They were, one couple, or one lady was did the Bologna trip and then was meeting her husband in Paris. So they could use that, since they were there, to do their own personal travel. So we think that people like the a la carte option, that they could do what they wanted to do. So that's something that's different from our trip. And so for our marketing, we first sent information out to all of our students who had studied in Bologna, which was nearly 1,000 people. And they sort of had first crack at the trip. It was open to all alumni and current parents. But we also then did some targeted mailings to alums living in Europe. And we had a few folks. We had a couple from Prague come down. We had a couple that lived in Vienna come down just because they could. And then we also were sure to include past faculty directors because, especially in Bologna, that program has been around so long, we invited past directors to come back as well. So our trip is a little bit different than a lot of people's trips, and I do that all out of my office with the help of the on-site staff who did like the logistical bookings of booking the bus to get to the balsamic vinegar place and things like that. And so I work with them for on-the-ground stuff, and I work with faculty who are back on campus in terms of recommendations that they have for things that we just really must do. So that's Dickinson's program.
Is this on? Good. I just briefly want to tell you about a fourth variation, because that's the one I'm doing with Harvard, and regrettably Harvard isn't here to talk about it. But what Harvard wants to do, the Alumni Association, is an actual very in-depth, common shared experience. So it isn't kind of what we had been talking about, moving in and out of you know, the alumni and the students. They want all of them to be together at all times, staying in the same accommodations, which obviously are not of the same level that you would expect for a standard alumni tour, because you know sometimes they're dormitories or clean, private bathrooms, but basic. Everything is done together. So it's a slightly different program. And from a marketing point of view, once the Harvard has the price, they play around with it so that the alumni kind of bear the burden of paying for the trip, so that the price of the students for the students is much lesser. So it attracts the students because of the low cost. It attracts the alumni because of having the experience of being with students, and the students can see what they can accomplish in the future. So that's just one more version of the same thing. Now, I'm going to open up to questions. And we have one more person here you may see as a respondent. Joanna Cossette is Vice President Groups and Tours at Key Travel USA. She works closely with Dr. Keys on the programs. She has over 30 years' experience in the travel industry, including running her own, I presume, travel agency, Cossette Watson, working at the Homestead Resort in Virginia, and as well as the International Bicycle Tours in Connecticut. And since 2003, she has established global partnerships with NGOs, local DMCs, enabling her to collaborate with the humanitarian and academic sectors to create life-changing and educational programs and itineraries. A native of Quebec, Canada, graduate of St. Jerome College in Public Relations and Communications, so she will be responding to your questions. And I'm going to start the questions, first of all, based on what I just said about what Harvard does, and I'm inviting anyone who has any experience or thoughts on this, when you do have a program with people of a great age difference, how do you keep the students who are much more active and have much different interests together with the adults for a two-week period of time? And I'm asking this because I've done one of these programs, not a student alumni program, but a program that had very different age groups. And I've learned a lot. So it didn't work out very well. But I was so I've learned from that, and I was wondering if anybody could comment on that aspect. Dr. Keith?
We actually do that a lot. And we try to make up some of that difference, first of all, in pairing the roommates according to their age differences. We try to not take someone that's in their 20s and put them with someone that's 55 or 60. Also, with some of the activities, especially with the downtime, we try to arrange for students to be able to go wander on their own and do certain things, and we also provide alternative activities. Part of what we do in all of our trips is that we provide some downtime, usually in the evening and on the weekend, but at the end of our trip, we spend about 3 days where we actually go somewhere, and we usually have a tour package with also a lot of downtime, and people pair up. So that's the activities are done together, the focus is done together, but very often it's split up with the downtime.
I can speak to that. We also, when we take the combined groups, you have to be sensitive, as Peter said, to the different ways that people travel, the age groups travel. So you have to build in some flexibility to the program so that students especially, I have found that students value free time on a tour sometimes more than the older adults. They prefer to have their time pretty scheduled and just tell me where to go and make it good, where students will want to go off and do their own thing. And so if you can build that time into it, I think you can successfully combine the two groups.
From the audience at this stage?
I have a question.
Can I take the microphone? Do your universities have codes of conduct to protect you against any kind of liability in terms of bad behavior on the part of alumni?
We certainly have have had that in both universities, and also with the provision that if at any point we have to ask someone to go back, they go back on their own dime.
We don't have a written code of, well, no, that's not true. The university has, there are rules, I guess, for students traveling that are different than alumni. The students simply have to know what those are and are expected to abide by them. There is a concern sometimes on the part of the university that alumni may get the wrong impression from our students, or they come with a certain set of this is what a student should be like because this is what we were like when we were students, and there is sometimes a concern that, you know, do the alumni want to hear what the students were doing at 4 o'clock in the morning last night? Maybe not, okay? So how do we negotiate that? It really hasn't been much of a problem, frankly, and I think if students have enough time on their own, they're satisfied that they are able to do their own thing and not be sort of constrained by the activities of the old people, or the limitations maybe of the older people on the tour.
One more comment on that. We actually get sometimes more restrictions from the host agencies because we stay at compounds very often with the NGO groups and so forth, their set of rules sometimes far exceeds what we have at the university.
I guess I have a question, Joanne. You're the only one here who actually does the marketing of this. Are there any special ways, ruses, that you attract both audiences to the program?
Yes. So actually, we don't do any marketing. It's all referral from people that have been on the tours or between professors that tell other professors to contact us. And our role is to collaborate with the professor. The professor knows what he wants to accomplish from the trip. And sometimes they may have a contact. Let's say that the professor calls me and says, well, I would like to go to India, and our budget is about that much, and we want to have that many people. And I will say, well, I have a really good contact in India, a very good NGO and a destination management company that specialize in working and may have some projects that would interest you that could give the credits to the students and the work hours. So we look at airfare. So I may propose two or three destinations if they don't already have sometimes they have a contact. And then we start pricing the air. We have special contracts that are for not-for-profit, and if the purpose of the trip is a humanitarian, then we already take a good benefit in having special conditions and special fares. Once that's established, then we schedule a Skype meeting with the destination management company first, Dr. Keys in this instance, let's say, and I, and we discuss a skeleton itinerary, and then it matures a little bit, and then when we have more specific information from the professor, then we schedule another meeting with the NGO, the destination management company, and us, and then we coordinate. My role, so typically a trip like that might be about 3 weeks to get the work accomplished. So Monday through Friday, they usually do work. The itinerary is often purposely the work that they want to do, and then at night they have some free time. On the weekends, then I may organize with the destination management company some activities that would be appealing to the group. Then at the end of the trip, if it's an airline that has a connection and maybe a free stopover, let's say that they're going to Kenya connecting in Paris, then we may have 3 days in Paris, and then we organize a little, I call that a kind of a reward for 3 days where people can discuss their trip but be in a different environment. And then the professor, you know, decides what they want to do, but I make some suggestion. And it's a very much of a collaboration between all of us to create those type of itineraries.
This is a question for all of you. If or when you do another student alumni trip, is there anything that you would do differently? Did you learn something from the tour that you would change on future tours? Did you have any constructive feedback from your passengers? And what would you do?
Well, I'll answer that one. Because as I said, the first experience, it wasn't student alumni, but the kids just wanted to go on their own and were not at all interested in the history or the architecture or anything of that nature. So my approach when I designed the program that Harvard asked me to design was to, in a way, make it more student-centric than alumni-centric, because the idea that I perceived from the first one was that the adults were willing to do anything as long as they got some education, and it made them feel better to be with the younger people because it was kind of a youthful experience and they could chat with them and teach them and share things with them. but the students were less likely to sit through some boring lecture. So as long as the students were happy, I think the adults would be happy. So that was probably the most dramatic change, because up to then I had always thought, you know, of the educational, cultural aspect of the tour, and that wasn't working for 22-year-olds. So that would have been the major change.
For us, we remain pretty program-centric. I love that word. very focused on what the program was. So our process of tweaking things, if you would, is that we, over the years, started combining our community and alumni people with our students, because they had more experience, usually in counseling or working in the field, than our students did. And so it was a way that our students could actually learn from the professionals that were already working as we were focusing what we were doing out in the community that we were in. So it was a nice balance for the professionals and the alumni, in that they were almost secondary supervisors, although we had faculty with all of our students and all of our alumni.
I think it's important to, obviously, all of this is customized. You have, each program is different, each condition. If you have a credit course, then you know that the students are going to be there because they need that credit. If you do like Harvard, where there is no credit, you have to take a different approach. And I think the role of the study leader, the lecturer, is also cardinal. You have to select somebody who is energetic and will keep everybody's attention lively. You can't have, you know, just somebody who tells you, well, in 1576 this was built 300 meters high. You know, you have to have energy for the young people. The older people will enjoy that too. Very important, I think, to have a very personable, energetic study leader for these programs.
For Dickinson, our first program was in Bologna because it was our 50th anniversary, and it was our Bologna trip was to be a kickoff to a larger Tuscany trip, a two-week Tuscan trip, and that trip didn't sell. That didn't go, but the Bologna part did. So that was just 3 days. Well, the next one I'm working on for Malaga is a full 7, and I actually would love like a couple of more days as I see how many things there are to do. So we are doing more programming than we did our first time. And again, by making it a la carte, people can choose to do more or less, just dependent upon what they want to do personally, how much they want to be programmed. But I think the a la carte issue is nice, because I have activities. Sometimes in the morning I have two choices. We have a lunch together. Sometimes the afternoon there's two. They can choose if they're going to do an artist workshop or if they're going to go on a day trip. So we are definitely doing more and a longer programming for our future trips.
Question for Laura. Pepperdine does a very similar program, and so I'm really interested to see what you do. But in regards to kind of rallying the students and alumni together, specifically because they're all in different locations, can you talk about how you rally them together, and then how, like you said, that they have options to split into different trip mm-hmm. into different tracks? Can you talk about how you still keep them united?
Sure. So we went during the academic year. We went in April. So students were in classes. So we got permission from, I think, all the classes offered on those days we wanted to offer them, but one professor, and that professor was giving a test that day, so alums couldn't sit in on that. But all the other classes, the alums could choose to sit in on, and as I said, most alums did enjoy sitting in on that. So that was one touch point. We had a reception at Dickinson's Center the very first night, and the on-site staff was great. They had pulled out pictures from over the years, so a lot of the alums that were there could find them and find their group and find pictures from their group trips. So that was at our center. So every spring, there's already a lecture series that takes place in Bologna. They scheduled it for when the alums were there, so that was another time we came together. We heard a lecture. There was student awards given out, because it was towards the end of the year. They're about 2 weeks from the end of their classes. So a student award was given out there. Students throughout the year have a photo contest, and they could submit photos. So they were out on the first night at the center, and alums could vote on them. and then the winner was announced at this lecture series. And then just by people chatting, getting to know folks throughout the 3 days, a bunch of them got together on the last night and just spent all evening in a local restaurant just hanging out. So that's something they chose to do, and they made happen. We didn't schedule that, but they wanted that. So those are some of the ways that we brought them together. In looking ahead to my Malaga, we are going to be doing, several of the same types of things with bringing students in. And in Malaga, our students live with host families, so we're going to have a reception with alums, the students, and our host families. And then particularly if any of our alumni participants, if we know their host families are still around, they will be invited, particularly invited as well. So even if they're not a current host, if they have an alum who they hosted, we are going to be sure to invite them as well. So just some very targeted ways to bring students and alums together. But because they're not together all week, the students are in classes and quite busy.
Is this on?
Yes.
Okay, great. Just a quick question. I'm curious to know if these alumni student programs tend to attract your past travelers, people who are engaged with the university or with your program, or if they tend to attract completely new travelers to this sort of niche program.
For us, it's the usual mix. You know, we tend to draw about 30%, a third of our groups tend to be past travelers, and it's about the same when we travel with a mixed group.
Mm-hmm. This is a little bit off, but I forgot to mention this earlier. Because of the trips, we've had some gifts come in from people who hadn't made gifts in the past because they're seeing what the students are doing and whatnot. But I can't answer the other part of it, but I wanted to mention that these do create good feelings.
We also get a mix. One of the things I didn't mention is part of our sell, if you will, is particularly to the alumni, is the opportunity to make a difference wherever we're going. So it's the opportunity to actually work in traumatic conditions, whether it's in South Sudan or if it's in Lebanon or if it's in Kenya, or so that's part of how we send that out to them, and we get a mix of folks that have traveled and others that this is their first time. So,
Laura, I'd like to kind of rephrase what I asked Joanne earlier. When you try to attract alumni on these trips, have you had any challenges in getting enough people interested? And if so, how did you resolve them?
We haven't had challenges other than people's personal work schedules. Mm-hmm. The first trip we did to Bologna for a variety of administrative reasons was advertised very late, which was the biggest complaint by folks, that they had to kind of rearrange schedule at the last minute. It was advertised in the fall for a spring trip. So I am working ahead. We now have plans for 18, 19, and 20, and getting those dates out. So for my Malaga trip, the dates are already set. So we're just getting it out much earlier. We've heard from a ton of people that would have loved to have gone, but just simply couldn't go the days that we had picked in April. But moving forward, we're giving people much more notice. And then just doing those targeted marketing to the different groups. So people that studied there, all alums, people living in Europe, past directors. And in the one case, one of the past directors came, and he had four of his students come with because he was going. I mean, that was important to them, that they were able to spend some time with Professor Jarvis. So.
Anyone else? Okay.
Talk a little bit about how it worked, where the alumni helped to bear some of the costs for the students on the trip, and how the alumni feel about that. And yeah.
I regret to be Kent, because Harvard is doing all of the marketing there. You know, I gave them the idea was that I would give Harvard nice decent accommodations, but that were low cost. But as far as the actual split up of the money, that's entirely within their offices. I have no idea how they do that. But there is an understanding within the program. It is explained up front that this is the way it works. You know, the alumni are in a way paying for the enjoyment of the experience and for the future relationship and the development of the student. So it's very clear up front. Everybody can see that the student is paying, you know, $1,000 and the alumni is paying $3,000, whatever the breakdown. I don't know what it is. I just give Harvard a set price, and I have no idea what they do with it. But it is up front and clear. And as I said, this is, I believe, their third year. And initially it was just the standards of, you know, like Greece and, I mean, hate to call Greece standard, but more common destinations. So now they're it's apparently working well for them because they are expanding into more sort of exotic markets, which is what I'm doing. So it seems to be working out. They're very happy with it.
We market it as a student discount. So, you know, it gives the impression that here's the price, and the students get a discounted price. No one has argued with that. They were all there once, so.
We didn't do that for our trips. We've done that for other programs, and that came at the request of alumni saying, I'd like to help support the students in going to such and such a program, and I can't remember what program we did it. So alums suggested that way more students could participate, and then on future registrations for that particular event, people could choose to provide an additional, you know, their own personal amount to put to help a student attend the program. So that actually came from alums.
And our model is a little bit different because the students and the alumni actually support the faculty going on the trip. So part of their fee is also bringing the faculty as supervisors coming along on the trip and undergirding that, and it's just the price. And the way we sell that is, you know, we're gone for 2.5 weeks, sometimes three, and the package price is for airfare, room and board, certain meals when we're out, even when we're not working. And the entire package at the end, so it includes all the tours, all the entrance fees, et cetera, and we've had absolutely no trouble whatsoever selling it to both groups.
Excuse me. Thanks. I have a related question. Just do any of your schools have funds that have been donated by alumni or set aside by the school to help support the students' travel costs? And does that factor into the answer to this question?
We do have some donors who, in our case, it happens to be for the music tours. It's just was their passion, and they want to help students who wouldn't otherwise be able to go on those student ensemble tours to go, and so they've made contributions for a very specific purpose.
We didn't have donors per se, although from the workshops and the trainings that we did throughout the year, some of those funds were allocated to subsidize the trip, particularly for the students.
Yeah, and as I said, I don't really have the insider's knowledge of how Harvard does it, but it seems to me that it's not just entirely the burden of the alumni, that there are some funds that the HAA has for kind of a scholarship purpose, if you wish. So there's maybe like a combined effort to lower the price of the student, for the student as much as possible. So a question in the back there.
Thank you. My question is for Laura. By the way, I'm Nancy McNeil from UC Berkeley, Cal Discoveries Travel. And I'm very interested in your program, sort of from the ground level. I have a couple of questions. One is, how long have you been doing your program?
April of 2016.
Great.
Brand new.
Okay. And secondly, then, can you tell me how the idea or how it actually developed and came to be. Was it professors coming to you? Was it you reaching out? I'm just curious about the answer to that.
Well, in the alumni office, we took the opportunity for the academic year of 2015-16 to celebrate our 50 years of global education. So it was a year-long celebration. We had an event in Washington, D.C. that had over 500 alums come from across the country to celebrate our 50 years of global education. There was a scholarship fund that was established in honor of our 50 years. We had events all over the city. So I was at a paella in the park, and we had a group, you know, the Spanish group was at this museum looking at Spanish exhibits. We had lectures all throughout the our clubs across the country to celebrate 50 years of global education. So we had faculty on the road and students talking about their experiences. And this Bologna trip was just the culmination of a year-long of celebration because Bologna was our first program. And like I said, it was to be then a larger Tuscany trip that kicked off from there. But it was just a year-long celebration that looked at global education in general, and not just our study abroad sites, but just bringing international students to Carlisle and all the all the ways we are a global campus, not just Bologna or not just our 12 centers.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Do you also foresee so you're running one program like this a year right now? Do you foresee that it might be more than that, or hope that it might be more than that?
What we would like to do is, so right now we are partnering with one company, and they're running an Iceland trip for us, and that's been very popular. I would like to have one of these study abroad site trips once a year. In addition to, I'd like to see several. We just are getting back into the alumni travel game, and we have a new VP, and I'm not sure where that falls on his priority list, but I'm coming back from this conference armed with lots of information. So I'd love to do just even, 4 or 5 trips a year in addition to our unique Dickinson Center programs.
Great. Thank you so much.
If I read a little bit into one of your questions, though, you're asking, where do I look? And what I would say to you is you look through the deans of the school and the program directors, because they know the professors that are active in building programs. They know the professors that are reaching into certain areas because of their research or building something out of their interests. Those are the places you're going to find professors that are interested in this.
Well, it looks like we've ended. So if you would be kind enough to fill out the little form that was left in front of you at the desks. And thank you for coming. Hope you learned something.